This is the son of PCJ. Shortwave listening, to many the final frontier. These are the voyages of PCJ Radio's Media Network Plus. Its continuing mission to track down strange news signals and to seek out news stations and radio personalities and to boldly go where many men have gone before. Well, that was certainly a dramatic opening, but I think it's perfect for today's show. Because from March 1st to the 3rd, which is today, the SWL Winterfest, which is going on in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania in the United States, celebrates its 25th anniversary. An amazing feat by all means. On today's edition, we're going to rewind and head back to one past edition of the SWL Fest that took place in 2006. To help us along, well, a very good friend of ours and host of Switzerland in Sound, Bob Zanotti, will be here. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus, taking a cue from H.G. Wells and doing our own version of time travel. 25 years ago, the first SWL Winterfest was held in Culpsville, Pennsylvania, in the United States. Over the last 25 years, we've seen many changes to international shortwave broadcasting. The BBC World Service, Radio Netherlands, and others either stopped or cut back transmissions to North America, Australia, and Europe. Some stations, like Swiss Radio International and others, have vanished only to become part of broadcasting history. Technology has also changed. In the last 25 years, shortwave receivers have become more portable and affordable. In many parts of the world, the internet, phone apps, and satellite have taken over the job from shortwave. Despite all these changes, once a year, shortwave listeners and DXers gather in Pennsylvania to talk radio. There have also been some very well-known shortwave personalities that have attended the SWL Fest. One of those happens to be Bob Zanotti. Now, if you don't know Bob Zanotti was one of the two Bobs who hosted the Swiss shortwave merry-go-round on the now-defunct Swiss Radio International. And if you didn't know what Swiss Radio International was, well, you must be very young. But anyway, Bob has attended two Winterfests. The last time was 6 years ago. He now joins us to tell us about his memories of the fest.
I think the first time I went was 2001, and that was just after I parted company with Swiss Radio International. And I felt the need to keep in company of the audience and the people of that time and people I knew from the field, broadcasters and listeners. So I did go to Culpsville. It was a lot of fun. And I went, I don't remember, three or four times altogether. The last time, I believe, was 2006. And it is just the way it's built. I mean, just as advertised, it is the meeting place in North America where North American SWLs or DXers or what's left of them actually get together for just a good time. They let it all hang out. The radio pirates are there. They run a little mini pirate FM station from the hotel running all night. You see people that, you know, you've seen decades before. You talk radio. It's a kind of time warp, and it's as though when you go there, at least this is my recollection up until about 2006, when you go there, you're just stepping back literally decades in time to an age where shortwave radio was alive and well and on everybody's mind. It's certainly on everybody's mind who goes there.
Bob, I've been asking people that have gone to every single one from the first one, people that have gone to a few here and there, people that are now going to the 25th one that haven't gone maybe for the last 3 years. If I'm a newbie, if I can use that term, what can I expect? Can I expect the unexpected, do you think?
Well, the only thing you can expect at Culpsville is the unexpected. Having said that, on the other hand, there's a great deal of predictability. The first thing as a broadcaster, a veteran broadcaster like yourself, that I would expect is a warm welcome. It's nice to go there as a broadcaster because You're talking to people who know who you are.
That's not quite only scary, actually.
they got your number, Keith. They got all of our numbers. No, they were people who were listening to you. They know who you are. And above all, they appreciate you coming. When you go there, you have a feeling that your presence is really appreciated. And I always felt that. And it was always nice to talk to people who used to be just names behind correspondence at the station, or somebody you did meet before, maybe at another meeting, years and years or decades before. I go back to this theme, time stands still. When you go to the Winterfest in Pennsylvania, whether it be Culpsville or the new venue they have, the venue may change, but the people, the faces, the mentality, the aura about it doesn't change. It is a ritual which is reminiscent of, let's say, the Roman Catholic Church. If you go to a mass, no matter where you go on earth, it's going to be the same. You feel comfortable there. There's a ritual, a predictability about it. You know exactly what's going to happen. And this is the way it is at the Winterfest. The few times that I went, it was the same. It was deja vu, the same program every year with the same actors. It was like the Mercury Theater of shortwave radio, and I say this in a very positive sense because we're so full of unpredictability, shock. We don't know what's coming around the bend. But when you go to Culpsville or when you go to the SWL Winterfest, that's the nice thing about it. I think that's what draws people back all the time. You know you're going to be in a safe haven of people who are like thinkers and appreciate shortwave. The talk is about shortwave. You get a few radio hams in there as well. The ritual plays itself over and over and over again every single year. And obviously, nobody gets tired of it. You look forward to it.
Bob Zanotti, thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith, and enjoy yourself. I know you will.
Now let's take a listen to just some of the people Bob Zanotti met up with when he attended the SWL Winterfest in 2006. First up, Skip Array.
Well, to go back to what it is for me, it's still magic. It's always been, it always will be.
That's the radio ham, too.
Right. The ability to accept and receive a radio signal over a distance, especially a radio signal that either you're not meant to hear or was meant to go to someplace else and you've been able to intercept it, that just always holds a fascination. In terms of international shortwave broadcasting, as a child of the 60s, if you want to call me that, I can't say that I just dislike the country I live in or the government I'm ruled under, but living in that era, I've learned to have sufficient skepticism about whatever is presented to me in the public forums in my own country about other countries. So I've always felt obliged to learn about the world from its sources. If something is happening in Switzerland, I want to hear about it from Switzerland. If something is happening in England, I want to hear about it from England. If something's happening in Swaziland, I want to try to find a way to find out.
Unfiltered.
Yes, and direct and as close to the source. And also, unlike the American news, is something other than a 30-second soundbite. I'd like to hear a little more depth and detail. And I'm always surprised and amazed at how much more I can learn using the same amount of time to study the news that I might apply if I was just watching CNN or NBC or something like that. I can get more bang for my buck by listening to World Broadcast.
I'd like to sit down with someone I've known for several years, Alan Ludell. Alan, good to see you again. You are a commercial broadcaster, but maybe a rare bird in the commercial field. You're also a great shortwave listening fan, and you've used it even professionally.
That is true. Been a shortwave listener since the age of 11, and I'm 50 now, so it's a long time. And as far as the application for commercial purposes, it certainly gives me a better understanding and grasp of the world, and I can then in turn use that for what I do on the air on a commercial station.
We have to explain that you have been for many years a news director in the state of Delaware. You were using a lot of input from international broadcasting stations to your own news operation.
That is correct. Of course, in American broadcasting, doing your local stuff is obviously the main part of the dinner. However, I believe to spice it up, to give it more depth, and certainly to make your station more noteworthy, if you can try to tie it into things not only nationally but internationally, is very useful. And just to give you a couple of examples, there have been times I've relied on international broadcasters for live interviews on my own station.
Including my good self.
That is true.
On a couple of occasions.
And, you know, once upon a time, the old Swiss Radio International and all, and God rest its soul. But certainly the,
Amen.
The continuing existing international broadcasters. And there are other applications. One time, right before the Gulf War, I remember I called up Radio Canada International, and then I got to CBC, as it happens, which is the domestic program, and we exchanged experts lists on the Middle East. Very helpful. I had more experts. They had more experts that they had gotten from me. And you keep working it that way, and then one thing leads to another. And before you know it, you can come up with really original stuff. One example was right after 9/11 occurred, as a result of some of my international listening and also reading newspapers, I happen to know a Pakistani journalist, and I said, what about this guy Hamid Mir, who just interviewed Osama bin Laden? I can't get to Osama bin Laden. Can I get to Hamid Mir, the guy from Ossoff of Islamabad, who had interviewed Osama bin Laden? And he said, oh, sure, Alan. Here's his wife's phone. Here's his phone. Here's his cell phone in his car. So I go ahead, and I dial up the numbers. They work fine, and I have an interview that a lot of people were talking about. And I have a news hour at noon. I integrate local and international news. I bring the international news to people in Delaware. I may be anchoring news from the Delaware General Assembly, the state legislature in Dover, and yet be talking to somebody live in Moscow. So I'm trying to tie in the two. And guess what? Latest Arbitron ratings, the news hour that I took at noon from one station to the other, we are beating Rush Limbaugh in the noon hour.
Dr. Kim Andrew Elliott, who is with the Market Research Department of the Voice of America, also the former host of the VOA's Communications World Communications Program, also a radio ham. What's your call again, Kim?
KD9XB.
Kim, we have to explain that traditional AM radio, AM stands for amplitude modulation. Bob Tolman, my friend and partner in the Swiss Shortwave Merry-Go-Round, would always talk about ancient modulation. But it works. It does the job, and almost all of international broadcasting on shortwave, or HF, is by analog. But now we have something new, and it's digital, and it's called Digital Radio Mondiale. The French were involved. We can hear that. They managed to get a French word in there. World Digital Radio would be the English, pure English translation. Tell us about it. What is it supposed to do? How is it supposed to revolutionize international shortwave radio?
I think some people saw it as a way to save shortwave from its demise. People were assuming that fewer and fewer people would listen to shortwave and fewer broadcasters would transmit on shortwave. Well, this is a way of transmitting on shortwave without the usual degradations of shortwave, without the fading, without the interference from other stations, and without the low level of audio quality that sometimes is associated with analog.
Today, this has become very acute in some places. For example, in the motel, it's very difficult to listen to even powerful local AM medium wave broadcast stations because there's so much digital garbage there coming from cables, broadband data transmission, digital clocks, digital radios. It's a real problem.
It is, and in just the decade or so that I've been attending these these SWL fests at this hotel.
Got worse, huh?
It has gotten worse in the few years, and it seems to get worse all the time. We put an antenna every year up on the roof, and it has gotten worse and worse in that I think we're going to have to put an antenna away from the building. But I have to say that, for the most part, the DRM has overcome that noise, whereas the analog signals, the noise is present, at least at underneath the signal. So that's one good thing for DRM.
His name is David Gorin, who provides programming for National Public Radio in the United States. David, you are absolutely fascinated with international radio, and you're a great personal fan of shortwave. How did that come about?
Well, probably like a lot of other people my age in their mid to late 40s. As a kid, where there weren't a lot of media outlets in the United States when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, and my uncle gave me an old radio of his, which had a shortwave band on it.
It's always a relative who gives us a radio, right?
Right, and I turn it on, and out pops, "This is Radio Moscow." And I was just hooked with finding, you know, all the different, you know, international broadcasters and music, and I was just fascinated with, you know, the sense of feeling another place through the radio far away. And I, just after college, I was working in a used bookstore, and an old World Radio TV handbook slid across the desk.
That's the directory of all the world's leading stations,
right?
Just about all of them.
Yeah, and it was a couple years old, but it sort of hooked my interest again, and I got a radio, an old Panasonic RF2900, and I started exploring again. And at the same time, I was trying to start a career in radio, and so stories about radio became one of my interests.
One of the most charismatic characters who occasionally turns up at the Winterfest here in Culpsville is a name that will be known to any enthusiast who follows the fates and fortunes of the world's pirate radio broadcasters, especially those here in North America. His name is Alan Weiner. Today, Alan is a very respectable, I don't think that's an exaggeration, Alan, is it?
I hope.
At least you're a legal broadcaster.
Yes.
And you are the owner and operator of the shortwave station, the private shortwave station, WBCQ, Whiskey Bravo Charlie Quebec. You're out of Maine. Now, that is not the interesting point right now. Let's go back in history, Alan, because you made your name, I won't say fortune, but certainly fame, as one of the first pirate broadcasters the only one in the New York City area. Is that right? We're going back to the 60s?
We're going back to 1968, 69, 70, and 71. Yes, I operated AM and FM and television.
A few hundred watts, too. It was not a peanut roaster.
No, we were 300 watts on everything. And this was like, you know, 69, 70, 71. And at the time, we were the only pirates operating out of the New York City area.
Where did you get that inspiration?
Well, it goes back when I was a kid. I mean, really a kid. When I used to see documentaries on television, you know, when I was, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, about the old-time radio days, when people would sit around their radio in a living room and it was like the centerpiece of attention, and that radio plays and dramas and news and information really affected people. And I said, gee, you know, I want to get me one of these radio stations. I want to do this. This looks like fun.
I got to interrupt and ask you, did you try the phono oscillator first? Remember those things, you know? Lafayette Radio sold them. I had one, and I had wires strung up all over the garage playing music and appealing to the neighbors to please tell me if I could be received. Nobody ever responded.
Bob, I still have my original Lafayette broadcaster. that I did.
I checked mine out very, very tearfully and reluctantly just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I did everything I could to extend the range beyond my neighbor's house.
Right.
And yes, I did start that way, but
I even put an audio processor on mine. Now they're
really?
Very sophisticated
oh,
at the
cool.
time.
Oh, yeah. Cool. No, I got tired of that, and I went to the public library and I took out books on transmitters and power supplies.
You built your own?
At first, I built my own, and then I started converting old military surplus transmitters that I could buy for nothing,
right.
you know, next to nothing, and they had 50 watts, a couple of hundred watts, and that's how we built our first equipment.
But there's someone grinning in front of me right now. His name is Sheldon Harvey, who is the president of the Canadian International DX Club, which is very much alive and well and living in Greenfield Park outside Montreal.
That's right.
Nice to see you, Sheldon.
Thanks very much.
And very, very nice to see a dear old friend of ours, too. And we know each other for decades, professionally and personally, Michael Murray. Now, that name seems familiar. It's because Michael Murray, for many years, he told me before, more than he cares to remember, was the Secretary General of the European DX Council, which was the umbrella organization of all of the major shortwave radio clubs in Europe. Now, you've retired from that function, but the EDXC survives as well, Michael, I believe.
It does indeed, yes. Yeah. It has its hiccups every now and again, and it's currently in one. They're looking for a new Secretary General and assistant. I'm not too sure how they're getting on with that, but it's still motoring along, and they had a conference last year in Prague, and they've got one this coming year in St. Petersburg in Russia. So they're still functioning.
I think in North America we've seen a lot of changes. Certainly technology changes have affected what we do. And some people have grown with it, some clubs have grown with it, and some have sort of fallen by the wayside, looking at it as either a lost cause, they've lost too many members, and they've sort of cut too close to the bone, and they just cannot continue to do what they were doing. Look at our case with CIDX. We've been around since 1962, but one thing we've tried to do is sort of keep pace with what's going along in the technology world as it relates to broadcasting. One of our beliefs is that the message coming out from the broadcasters is probably more important than the medium that they use of getting the signal to people. And I think what listeners need to look at is what is more important to them, the content of the program that they're listening to or the method that they receive it. And now we have so many new methods available to us that a lot of us really don't care whether it comes out of a radio, comes off a computer, a satellite, a whatever, as long as you can get access to it.
There we go, some of the voices from the 2006 SWL Winterfest that was held in Culpsville, Pennsylvania in the United States. For the past 2 years, they've been in a new location, Plymouth Meeting. Some people who have attended the past festivals have said, oh, it's just down the road. It's just down the road. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, and there's a number of ways you can get in touch with us. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And you can also call the PCJ answer line. What is that? We'll take a listen to this.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
There you have it, information on the PCJ answer line. And by the way, your comments may be used on any one of our programs. All right, now let me tell you what's coming up over the next few weeks. Next week on the program, we're going to be revisiting two features that we had on the show last year that many of you wanted to hear again. The first is a visit to the BBC Far East relay station. And then we're going to be joined by Vasily Strelnikov of the Voice of Russia World Service. Many of you who are young enough will remember Vasily because in the 1980s and early 90s, he hosted a program on Radio Moscow called Vasily's Weekend. Some of the other special programs that we have coming up is a visit to the Voice of America in Washington, also a visit to the Radio Netherlands relay station on the island of Bonaire, which is scheduled to close in October this year. Now you're saying, wait a second, Keith, you were at the SWL Fest. Are you going to be doing any more on the SWL Fest? Yes, of course, there's going to be some interviews and some other features of the interesting people that I met at this year's Winterfest, the 25th anniversary of the SWL Winterfest. So you'll have to stay tuned. Now, if you wish to listen to this program again, as well as past editions, both the weekly 30-minute edition and the monthly 55-minute edition, as well as find out information on where the program airs on shortwave, satellite, AM and FM, just go to the website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. Once again, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. And, of course, our email address is, as always, mnp@pcjmedia.com. To end, we're going to end on a musical note, and I'm dedicating this song to all those attending this year's 25th anniversary of the Shortwave Listeners Fest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. It's a song that I recorded last year in Japan with the NHK Orchestra. It's called On a Wonderful Day Like Today. And I think that this is a wonderful day. Everybody's having a grand old time. Anyway, I do have to leave you right now. So on behalf of Poet Macquarie, Dan Hensley, our propagation guru, this is Keith Perron in the United States, I think. Well, I'm technically in the United States, but this program is actually coming to you from Taiwan. On behalf of everyone that helped put this program together, including a special thank you to Bob Zanotti, we'll see you all again very, very soon. 73s to you all, and a grand 88 to the ladies.
On a wonderful day like today, I defy any cloud to appear in the sky. Dare any raindrop to pop in my eye. On a wonderful day like today, on a wonderful morning like this, when the sun is as big as a yellow balloon, even the sparrows are singing in tune. On a wonderful morning like this, on a morning like this, I could kiss everybody. I'm so full of love and goodwill. Let me say furthermore, I adore everybody. Do come and dine, the pleasure is mine, and I will pay the bill. May I take this occasion to say that the whole human race should go down on its knees, show that we're grateful for mornings like these, for the world's in a wonderful way, on a wonderful day like today. Like this, I could kiss everybody. I'm so full of love and goodwill. Let me say furthermore, I adore everybody. Do come and dine, the pleasure's gonna be mine. I'm gonna pay the bill, wee wee, ha ha. May I take this occasion to say that the whole human race should go down on its knees, show that we're grateful for mornings like these, for the world's in a wonderful way, on a wonderful day.